is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud here. And just when you think it can't get any worse with Russia, well, if you haven't seen the videos and listened to Vladimir Putin and his bragging rights on the missiles and then how where they're targeted to, that will certainly get your attention. What is going on with that relationship? Also, what's up with the relationship with Jeff Sessions, our Attorney General, and the President? Again, is this strategic in nature? Of course, you've seen the tweet this past week here with the President, and this is a big conversation here today. Also, we have a real problem, friends, with government corruption, and we're going to need a cleanup in aisle 7. We'll talk about that in our next segment as well. And finally, you know, with all of this going on with Broward County and the recent school shootings, you know, we are going to take a deeper look into this PROMISE program. Lieutenant Joseph Pinguero will be on with us later in the day here, and we will discuss with him what's behind all this and why, again, are these records of these young people being expunged in the way that they are. Well, let's get started here at the top of the show here, and I'd like you to welcome to the program here, Colonel Jim Warshak is here. He's retired from United States Air Force. He's a career Senior Intelligence and Special Missions Officer. He served as Deputy Director for Intelligence for U.S. Central Command and has worked on the White House National Security Council. Jim McKay is here. We haven't heard from him in a while. He's a political commentator, radio producer for Viewpoint, in fact. Jim brings his diverse analytical skills and his love of history and our republic, along with his appreciation of the founders and Constitution, to Viewpoint This Sunday. He works behind the scenes here every week. Good to have him on with us today as well. Dennis Santiago is a global risk and financial analyst. His subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, and global stability. And God knows we need some global stability at this moment. So let's get started here, guys, here. So here's the thing with this. I watched the video. I seen the reactions to everybody in the room when Vladimir Putin was given his State of the Nation. And it was quite startling, actually. I was startled with what was being discussed and what was up on the big screen. And it was something out of a, you know, Colonel Warshak, it seemed like it was out of a movie. I mean, it was hard to, you know, see that this was really happening. I was taken back. I wonder, was the Pentagon taken back at all? Because Putin describes in that State of the Nation meeting he was given that this was really very secretive. Nobody really knew what was happening as he was talking about this hypersonic missile that would go like at the 20 times the speed of sound and strike like a meteorite, like a fireball. Was the Pentagon taken by surprise here?
Not at all. In fact, most don't realize, but that video that they showed is pretty old. It was produced first back in 2007 as part of a futuristic presentation about future military capabilities. You know, all major militaries in the world do all this, and they like to look to the future and see what the threats look like, what the capabilities are that are needed. So they basically pulled a quite old video, married it up with some new terminology, and gave it to Putin to present to his countrymen and women, and that's what he did. The three things that really need to be looked at here, in addition to what I just noted, was, you know, Putin's up for re-election in a few days, a couple of weeks. So he has to look good before his voters. Of course, everybody knows he's automatically going to win despite some minimal opposition. It's a propaganda effort against the West and to what Russia sees as its adversaries. And he's been blown out of the water for the last year plus with Donald Trump, who talks about the military every day, talks about building the greatest, largest, strongest military. Putin's threatened by that. And after some of the events in Syria, there was even Russian video that came out of Russian mercenaries talking about how they pretty much got their clocks cleaned by the U.S. military and our special forces in Iraq and Syria. So, I mean, he's got to put a cover story on all this, and this is what he's done.
Well, I got to tell you, they certainly didn't put a disclaimer in that State of the Nation meeting that it was a video back X. That is amazing information here. Dennis Santiago, let me ask you this. Hypersonic missile, as they call it, 20 times the speed of sound. This sounds pretty fast, actually, Dennis. Now, you study these things. I mean, and they show them coming in to the nation here. And actually, I got to tell you, I don't want to give any secrets out as to where I reside in the country, so let's not get into that. But let's just say that the arrow and the missile was sort of pointed at my house, Dennis Santiago. What do we do about that?
Well, you know, it's not like we haven't known about this research and development. That every single one of the weapons that Putin put up on his videos, we've known about them for a while. We've been watching them for a while. We've been working on means to counter them for a while. It's a horse race that goes back and forth. That's the nature of weapon systems. And it's gone on ever since the Strategic Defense Initiative came around in this case, and it's been overlaid with a series of restrictions that have to do with arms control treaties that have layered on top of it the things you can do, things you cannot do. Putin's main message to the U.S. is that we've been making noise that we are going to abrogate the anti-ballistic missile treaty. And actually field systems that bothers him, not because of defending the United States, but if you listen to his speech in particular, what he was messaging most were weapon systems that had capabilities to attack Europe in a way that we could not intercept in time. So he's messaging the European Union and attempting to leverage them far more than he's attempting to leverage attacking the continental United States. And that's because he needs the leverage in the EU. He's in a fight for control over certain areas of Eastern Europe, and which, you know, anybody that's a strategic analyst would know at this point that that has been a long time in coming, ever since the wall fell. And, you know, in this past month, we just passed that point in time when the Berlin Wall has been down for as long as it's ever been up. I mean, it equalized the amount of time. And we are now in a period where he's trying to reset his own relationship with the European Union. And that's the bluster. So that's where we are. And, you know, you got to look at the messaging that's in there. And this guy, we can poo-poo him in the U.S. because we like to do stuff like that, but there's serious message, there's serious policy implication message inside of that speech.
Well, he is obviously the prince of propaganda, Putin here, very much so, and he's doing that clearly now, but doing it very effectively, it seems. You know, Jim McKay, when we look at what's happened from really the last decade of what's happened with the Ukraine, the Crimea, the move that Russia, like Dennis was just saying, they've become restless, if you will, since the collapse of the Soviet Union and since Reagan was here. And it seems like he is striking out in these things here. Now, the fact that there's talk about, about Trump's putting defensive missiles, this has always been a real sticking point with Russia, these defensive missiles into Ukraine. How much does that play into this, do you think? Again, he's a king of propaganda here. What do you think?
Well, you know, the defensive missiles are reality. They work. We have them in Israel. They've proved they work to shoot down short range ballistic.
Yeah, but will they work with these, Jim? Because he's saying they won't work with these hypersonic things. He actually said that in the State of the Nation very clearly. He said nothing's going to shoot this thing down. Does anybody know if that'll work or not? Or
well, first thing, I hate to rain on Putin's parade, but the physics to produce a hypersonic nuclear powered cruise missile just isn't there. I had the opportunity to talk to a friend of mine out at Lawrence Livermore Labs out on the West Coast the last couple days, and I said to him, and his name will go unmentioned because he has top secret clearance, is this possible? And he says, not in this reality, folks. Wow. He explained simply the nuclear density required to produce enough heat to produce a air-breathing, compact cruise missile that could fly continuously just isn't there. It's beyond even a fusion reactor kind of idea for unlimited power. So Mr. Putin's blowing smoke out of his butt on that one, folks.
Wow.
It just doesn't, ain't going to happen. They did it in the, or we did it, and actually the United States did it in the early 1950s, producing a nuclear-powered B-36 bomber. The reactor weighed 5 tons. Mm-hmm. Now, putting 5 tons of nuclear reactor into a cruise missile doesn't leave a whole lot of room for a warhead and produces an aircraft about 180 foot long with a 200 foot wingspan to get it into the air. So that's not happening. It's the cruise missile thing. And they only got that airplane to fly at about 400 miles an hour. So you can't get from where Putin wants to be saying is to reality with today's physics. It's not happening. So we don't have to really worry about it.
All right. So, well, interesting. So then I don't have to sell the house then after all here. All right, Colonel Warshak. Okay.
Colonel Warshak. Remember, I only live a few hundred miles south of you.
Exactly, exactly. So you have a running chance anyways. Colonel Warshak, pick up on that, please, and tell me, so you're seeing this, and so what I'm hearing is you're seeing this entire State of the Nation and the older video, as you say, pulled up is total bluster, nothing to it. Pentagon's on it. Everybody can sleep well at night, huh?
Pretty much. Jim McKay was pretty much spot on what he said about the capability. One of the things you have to realize and understand with cruise missiles is they need a launch platform, either a ship, a submarine, or an aircraft. And so Russia is limited on that. Mm-hmm. And the most capable way they would have to do it is with a ship. It's just not going to happen with a submarine, at least anything that Putin is talking about, and as Jim described, aircraft is out of is not an option. So he's pretty limited to this. The video shows MIRVed warheads from a ICBM, which they've had for the last 40 years, and you know that's part of the nuclear effort that mm-hmm. the Russians and we have, as well as China. So, you know, this is the video means it's designed to scare people. The Pentagon certainly knows better what's going on, and our intelligence community who follow this is very close.
But you know, I'll be the dissenter on in terms of technical capability, because yeah, I used to design this stuff,
mm-hmm.
and I believe it's possible. While he can't go to the extent of the ebullience of the video, just like back in the 1980s, we couldn't actually go to the extent of the stuff that we were showing off for SDI. But they have the technical means to create a new range of weapons that can probably stress the envelope of ours. They're not dumb people when it comes to science and engineering, and they've been thinking about this for a very long time. There's no such thing as a military advantage that lasts forever. There are technological capabilities that can be taken advantage of. And, you know, at that point, I think I've reached a limit of clearance and need to know as far as I want to discuss
okay.
that point.
All right. So before we go, I want to transition over a moment here to talk about the Attorney General and the President. Before I do, I will say that... you know, it seems to me that with all of this said about Vladimir Putin and Russia and the relationship with the United States, is we've missed a clear opportunity in this country. You know, back when President Trump was candidate Trump, and we hadn't really exposed all the egregious moves that Russia has done and how badly our government has botched all of this, it seemed to me there was an opportunity to maybe fix some of this relationship that had gone so bad so fast. And in order to fix a relationship, you have to get people to the table. You can't isolate them. And what's happened now is this relationship, which, again, I completely blame on our politicians, Putin needs to be handled with kid gloves, very clearly. And I don't don't think we're doing a good job of that very much at all here. Domestically here, our politicians have screwed this up big time by making Russia the poster child for everything that ails us. It's become about illegal to have a glass of Russian vodka or eat some Russian soup these days. So I don't think any of this has done any good to the relationship, whatever's going on. And by isolating people, then you get all of this propaganda and all of this nonsense coming out. None of it does well in the big picture. It's just fear and bluster that is permeates the ear and is going to create a more vile relationship in the future. I hope that at some point we can get over this and get Putin to the table. I'd like to see a meeting of the minds where Trump gets through, but to do that, you've got to get through these congressional leaders and the rest of the BS that's going on here to be able to bring people to the table to have real conversations. That's what it's going to take, I believe. And the rest of this is just a bunch of BS. Let's talk about Attorney General Jeff Sessions, please. And so this tweet was pretty remarkable here, and the tweet that the president released this past week was quite something. And he came out and said, why is Attorney General Jeff Sessions asking the Inspector General to investigate potentially massive FISA abuse? Will take forever, has no prosecutorial power, and already late with reports on Comey, etc. Isn't the IG an Obama guy? Why not use Justice Department lawyers? Disgraceful. So that was the tweet that was just released just a few days ago. And I have to tell you, before we go around here and give an opinion on this thing here, so there's an interesting story in The American Thinker as well by Thomas Lifson that I find fascinating. And he goes on to talk about a lot of the things, Colonel, that you sort of put out there prior to us on this program and others, about the fact that this is, you got to look at the barriers here of this relationship, where Sessions comes from, and the fact that, again, as you, by golly, about a year ago, Colonel Warshook, you told me that Trump plays three-level a chess game. I mean, he's like on this thing like nobody's business. If he's that sort of a strategist, is it still safe to say that is wild as this treat was to put out into the public venue, that there was a purpose to it and that potentially it's not as bad as it seems? Or do you think this thing has taken the turn and it is that bad?
No, I still think it's part of the strategy.
Wow.
You have to look at the relationship between him and Sessions going back to the campaign and what's going on now. And we talked about this a little while ago, where you don't reveal your hand and you don't show what you're up to, and you use a lot of distractions and psyop, and sometimes even have to put out misinformation to confuse those who may be getting close to what's going on. If I look at it this way, as many people as Trump lets go, if he was going to get rid of Sessions, he would have got rid of him a long time ago. I believe going all the way back to his recusal was designed to allow him to work behind the scenes, and I say that because you have to understand the Justice Department, and it's a very large agency, 110,000 staffers and attorneys. You have layers and layers of attorneys, many of whom have been filled in there over the last 8 or so years.
That's right.
During the Obama administration, and they're working against him, and so you've got to get to the top layer, which is the politicized part of this agency, and come up with ways to get rid of these senior people, and these are the ones we hear about every day who are in the news, So Sessions has got to maneuver through all this, and he's got to ensure that there are. You're investigating your own to be able to find out what they know and what they were involved in with the senior level political players. And so he's got a tough job to do.
Okay.
Everything is veneer, and he's doing things internally.
Well, it's a hornet's nest.
Look at all the things that are being slowly revealed.
Fired
all these guys, if he fired all these guys at the beginning, they would leave and they would plead the fifth.
But listen, here, as I said on our nightly news program here the other day, you know, I wish he would drive a bus over to Justice Department and put them all on a bus with their briefcases, clear them out of their desk on some Friday afternoon and start all over again. Because, you know, this is a long, drawn-out process. And as you just said, it's a hornet's nest over there. The Department of Justice, the State Department, is a complete hornet's nest. It's a mess. And this is obvious. This is impacting everything, which we'll talk about more of this and that cleanup on aisle 7 a little bit later in the show here. But wow, it is amazing. Jim McKay, let me ask you here with Jeff Sessions. Do you agree with Colonel Warshak? Because I have to tell you, there are a lot of Republicans, and I mean a lot of them, who are really fed up and tired of Jeff Sessions and want him to be replaced at once. Are you also subscribing to the fact that it's strategic in nature?
Not really. I think the strategy with Sessions was a senator. He was a kingpin or a linkage, had linkages all across the South. Mm-hmm. He was brought onto the campaign to make sure they maintained a solid Southern Republican bloc for the election.
Right.
That was his key issue thing there. Sessions is a senator. He works at the pace of the United States Senate. We all know how crippled that organization is. He has not, it's been 14 months since he's become the Attorney General, and he really hasn't produced anything tangible.
That we can see, Jim.
Yeah, I mean, Trump is a results guy. If there was results going on,
maybe
in any way, shape, or form, they'd be out there. It would be on the table.
Well, someone said the other day, someone said the other day to us, he ought to put Chris Christie in that spot and fire Sessions once. Boy, would that get some cameras. You want to talk about creating a media spin. Wow. That would be interesting. Listen, we got just a couple of moments here. Dennis, real quickly on this topic now. So, but let's remind people, Jeff Sessions spent 12 years as a U.S. attorney in Alabama, went on to spend 2 years as the attorney general of Alabama, then becoming a United States Senator. So he is a veteran prosecutor, and he sort of knows about all these secrets and where to go and have your ducks in line strategically, as Warshak says. But a lot of us are very, very impatient, Dennis. What do you say?
I actually hang out with Tom Lipscomb. So when I see his articles, I go like, Tom, here's my view of what's going on here, right? I mean, and it goes back to the first topic in that this whole the FBI is stuck on itself at the very top level. And, you know, so Wednesday you get the three top guys at the FBI going to dinner in public. You know, that's display. That's deliberate. Mm-hmm. And they're basically saying they're circling the wagons, mm-hmm. you know, and then the White House is on the other side. The bottom line there, these are games that are being played at the top of the system.
Yeah, big time.
They're throwing underlings under the bus as it goes on.
Sure.
And it's getting in the way of our national interest.
Okay.
Somewhere along the way, it needs to stop.
Well, there's a lot of casualties. Yeah. All right. So we're out of time here, but let me say this. Colonel Warshak, take 10 seconds to tell me, and this is a big question now, do you think it's possible or potentially possible at all that Vladimir Putin is really a Russian bot?
He wants to be the new Russian Empire, and that's his whole plan. That's his design, and he's an emperor romantic, and I think that's what
emperor romantic.
From him
I love it. Would you write a column, please, Warshak, on the emperor romantic? I just love that. What a fantastic title!
All right,
that would be a personal column, please, for me. I just love that. Anyways, big what a great segment. Big thank you to Colonel Jim Warshak, Jim McKay, Dennis Santiago. Up next, friends, we got that cleanup on aisle 7 I've been telling you about. Oh boy, you're going to need a few mops and buckets for this one. We'll be right back.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@americaoutloud.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com. where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Back with you here, Viewpoint, this Sunday, and as I promised, they clean up on aisle 7. We are here now, finally, at aisle 7, and we're going to take this on here. Very interesting. I've got a couple of articles I want to talk to you about, some real interesting commentary that's flowing out there, which will help us in this discussion. Let me bring on here our panelist here. Dennis Santiago is here. He's a global risk and financial analyst. As you know, his subject matter expertise includes strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability, and we'll need all of that. And Ava Armstrong is here. Ava is a political commentator, radio personality now. She's more than that. She's an author. And she writes about the everyday men and women with a focus on patriotism. Think law enforcement, military, and all of our heroes. What's going on in aisle 7? Let me tell you both right now. So let me simplify something here, and let me explain to folks a little bit here what's at the core of this Russia FISA abuse special counsel. So let's drill down here a minute. So you have an incumbent Democratic administration, okay, follow me, that uses its foreign intelligence collection ability and authority to monitor a Republican presidential campaign, okay? Along with the use of this made-up opposition research from the Democratic presidential campaign, all with the idea to secure victory for their candidate and to ensure defeat for the opposing candidate. Now, what could possibly be wrong with that picture? I don't know. And then I want to bring your attention to a really interesting piece in the National Review by Andrew McCarthy. Fascinating. And the way he laid it out. And he says the Democratic administration's Department of Justice went to the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court in the last 3 weeks of the presidential campaign to seek monitoring of a former advisor of the Republican presidential campaign, monitoring that would inevitably have revealed campaign communications in stored emails and text, and quite possibly in real-time conversations based on a stated suspicion, a fairy tale, something in their mind, a theory, or a witch hunt, whatever you want to call it, that there was a traitorous confederation between the Republican campaign and the Putin regime. You cannot make this stuff up. Ava, if you had written a book on this, you know, one of your books that you do these what-if scenarios, this would have been a hell of a seller. I don't know that anybody would have believed you, but it would have been a really interesting theory to put out there. It stretches the imagination, Ava, that we are talking about real life here and that this really, really happened. When you take all this forward and you look at what we're dealing with now and you take a look at the FBI and the Justice Department and all the stonewalling that went on, Ava, isn't it pretty clear that for months and months that they did not want to come up with this information, that they didn't want to produce anything? And why is that? How do you size it up?
I think Devin Nunez will be reviewing many other FISA warrants to compare them to this one. And I think in the end, after all this is said and done, I think the FISA court will change substantially. It may even disappear, but I do think it will change the actual, machinations of going in and asking for a FISA warrant. I think there will actually have to be other people present that will be, like judges of some other type. Mm-hmm. We need checks and balances. And this is exactly what the Founding Fathers warned us about, okay? Tyranny is government turned on the people. And this is what happened here. You know, President Trump was turned on by the government.
Mueller is fishing also in Jared Kushner's pond, don't forget. There's a lot of things with Kushner and his international dealing with that they're looking at. It could be some other problems there, Ava.
Well, let's not play games here. We know what Mueller's objective is.
It's
to take down Trump. It has nothing to do with Russians. It has nothing to do with our election. There was no meddling in our election. If there was any meddling, actually, Trump tried to find out if there were illegal voters in states, and he got stonewalled for doing that. And there were, in fact, illegal votes. But I digress. I was really shocked when Devin Nunes put this FISA abuse memo out.
Right.
I expected Congress to end Mueller's investigation at that point. Right. This memo is so, to me, so earth-shattering, so shocking that we can have a court, a kangaroo court, basically, where they can make up anything about anyone and take them down. And this was proven by, they used the same FISA court with Lois Lerner to take down Tea Party people.
Right.
And they actually destroyed people's lives here. I mean, we have to understand they're destroying General Flynn's life. He didn't do anything wrong. This has to be stopped. And I can't say this loudly enough, okay?
Right.
When are we going to sit down and Congress needs to do it? President Trump can't do it because he has the power to do it.
Well,
if he does it, it will look bad.
Exactly.
So Congress needs to act here.
Exactly. Well, now, there's a lot of truth to what you just say. Ava, playing on what you just say, just listen to this a minute here. Let's assume, for argument's sake, that it turns out there was no actionable Trump-Russia collusion, which you would agree with that, Ava, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that the FBI and Justice Department were overzealous in their investigation. The dubious FISA warrants, the Logan Act investigation of Michael Flynn, the pre-dawn raid on Paul Manafort's residence, etc. Listen to this, and here's the couple lines I think you'll find fascinating, folks. It would still be Donald Trump who brought into his campaign the likes of Carter Page, a jackass Kremlin apologist, and the duo of Manafort and Rick Gates, crooked collaborators with Kremlin agents. They were not planted by Barack Obama, Sally Yates, Jim Comey, Peter Strzok, etc. No matter how this turns out, we can already confidently say it is a disgrace that these characters were allowed anywhere near a presidential campaign. So my point of the segment with you and Dennis is that, listen, I think a lot of this is self-inflicted from, again, an amateur politician, a businessman turned politician, which we've all wanted for a lot of years, that is now in a political hell with people who, you know, he's in their parade. He's playing their game. It's their game. He's a guest there because he's not a politician. He's never been in Washington. Very unusual. This is the first time this has happened in our country. But now you see the thing I lay out there, and I think Trump and his inexperience, and I think a lot of the things that have happened with that campaign and then becoming president have clearly laid out a purely prime ground that is going to, I think it's a sinkhole effect because a lot of what is happening here, which has created all this smoke, Ava. There's a lot of smoke here.
We can go back and look at other campaigns mm-hmm. of past presidents.
Right.
We can go back and look at all the different corrupt individuals that were taken into the White House. I mean, it's a long, long list, Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
Other campaigns, other presidents did not have the 500-pound weight of Robert Mueller hanging around their neck, okay?
Right.
They were allowed to operate as a president. And this is just ridiculous what's going on. And that Politico article was written by someone on the left, I can tell you, because they're blaming Trump for something he didn't even do. Yeah, every president mm-hmm. has had corrupt people in their cabinet,
right.
either in the White House, right in the Oval Office. I mean, look at Bill Clinton.
Right.
Bill Clinton was doing nefarious things with a young intern in the Oval Office. I mean,
sure.
I don't know how much worse it can get than that. But, you know, nobody talks about those things. It's all Trump, hate Trump, you know. What it is, they hate what Trump stands for. Trump stands for liberty and freedom mm-hmm. and going back to our founding principles in this country. That's what they hate.
So the other thing exactly, that yeah. I would add to this okay. for perspective is that it is exactly normal mm-hmm. in a presidential administration for the first year to be filled with these leftover people from the campaign.
Sure, that's
and
what
they
I said.
Winnow them out, right? And in the right. second year of your right. Presidency, that's when you start to professionalize.
You get the steam. That's why a lot of administrations yeah. in the first year were not able to accomplish the kinds
exactly.
of things that they asked. You're exactly right. But you're missing out on the point of Carter Page, Manafort, Gates, all of these people that had been playing around this thing. And Kushner, they weren't checked out either, people that he's bought in.
No, they weren't. And, so he committed exactly the same kinds
exactly.
of blunders that every president before him also committed in their first year of office. And, you know, it's left him with a mess. The other guys were left with a mess, too. And so at this point, does he have a bigger mess to clean up than say Barack Obama did at the end of his first year?
Right.
You know, because he cleaned out house also, you know, and at the end of it, remember Rahm Emanuel going away and all that kind of stuff.
Right.
So it's not like every administration doesn't have these kinds of problems and loggerheads that show up inside the system. The difference with Trump is that because he's not a professional politician,
exactly.
he brought more of this baggage with him.
See, that's
than
my
others.
Point. That's my point right there. And that's and you agree with that. I mean, that's clearly what's happened here. Because of that inexperience of this man and everything that's happened, again, in their playground in Washington, all of these blunders, I think, are pretty, pretty clear now. And it's created a fertile ground for, like I say, a special counsel like Mueller to really do a lot of damage. What becomes of that now, it's hard to say. But now with Hope Hicks leaving this week and all the suspicion there after her sit down with him, with the congressional folks, I mean, this this really creates a problem, I think, and a lot, and even how much is true or not true, there's a lot of suspicion here, a lot of suspicion that's been laid out that something more is going on, which creates a bigger hole for the president to climb out of. Make a prediction for me now, Dennis, as we move forward now in where special counsel is, just what in your wildest dreams tells you when the special counsel wraps up, what happens next, and does the president weather this storm?
I don't think it wraps up anytime soon. You know, Washington loves gossip, and this is the best gossip generator they've got. I mean, you know, like poor Hope Hicks, right? I mean, you know, she's like Fawn Hall had to survive way back then with Oliver North.
Yeah.
And it's great gossip for Washington. The town is addicted to it. That's part of the reason it's a swamp.
That's it.
I'm looking at it strictly as a bystander.
Right.
I'm a patriot, and I see this as hurting our country tremendously.
Sure it is.
I agree.
I see President Trump is being hampered and held back, and he's also wasting a lot of time on this Mueller investigation thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, his staff is being pulled away from him. His appointments haven't even been made yet. Everything's being held up.
Right.
And this is all done with it with a concerted effort. That's what you have to understand. This, we have turned against ourselves. America has turned against herself.
Okay.
And this is the worst of the worst.
Yeah, yeah. Well said. Well said, both of you, because you've done exactly what I've sort of tried to lay out here for folks to really understand the chaos and what's really going on in aisle 7. I wasn't kidding. Coming up next, friends, we're going to take a deeper look into this promise program and really what's happened, what's behind all this, these young people like the criminal in Broward County who, you know, his record, nothing is on his record. He goes in, he massacres 17 souls there in the school district, something that has been a problem in this country. We're going to take a deeper look at that. Lieutenant Joseph Pinguero joins us. Stay right there. More Viewpoint in a minute.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. Award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
We are back now, friends, with more Viewpoint this Sunday. We're going to take a deeper look into what's being called the Promise Program. And we'll see what kind of promise that was. And this is really taking a look more at the things we've been talking about with you in recent weeks here. School shootings, these massacres that are happening too often with our kids and the soft targets. We've been talking about hardening the schools. We've been discussing these cuts. We're trying to bring it back to Broward County a moment, please. And I want to take a look more into what really happened there. Why was all of this not on this kid's record? This young guy who went in there who massacred these 17 souls. And why is this happening a lot where we don't really understand, we're not following the bouncing ball here? Let's take that on now. I'd like you to welcome to the show here, Lieutenant Joseph Pengero is here. He's a retired police lieutenant, director of school security. He is a master trainer and the owner of Pengero Training. I want to read something to you here out of the gate here about this interesting on this Promise program, Lieutenant Pengero. And here it is, the upshot of the Promise program. Now listen to this. It was started in Chicago by the current superintendent in the school district in Broward. Interestingly enough, his name is Robert Runcie. So he was the man that was in Chicago who started this all. When I say Chicago, you get the idea of Eric Holder. You get the idea of Rahm Emanuel. You get the idea of Barack Obama. You could start to draw some parallels here and connect the dots, friends. I mean, come on. You know, this is just all fact I'm giving you here. So the premise of the Promise program is federal grants. And again, this is what the focus of the Obama administration and Eric Holder was. The money came from the Department of Justice. Now, what I want to ask you, Lieutenant Pengero, is explain to us with this Promise program, from what you understand, what was the opportunity or the promise that they were putting forth, please?
What they were looking at, they're trying to, the bigger picture, I think, Malcolm, is they're trying to stamp out racism wherever they can find it. And they were trying to give, I guess, minority kids the best opportunity at the American dream that they possibly could. And from viewing the statistics, from my reading of this program and why it was started, is that looking at the statistics, you had minority kids were being punished and suspended from school and facing all kinds of other sanctions at higher rates than non-minority kids. And on its face value, it looked like, okay, there may be some racism involved here. So they wanted to try and stamp that out so that these kids had an opportunity like everyone else. And on its face value, when you look at that, you say, well, that's great. That's what we all want. We want everyone to have a fair shot at the American dream. That's really a good thing. How it actually is put into play, that's where we run into problems. Our friends on the left, they have a lot of good ideas. It's just, unfortunately, we see when they get the opportunity to put these things into play, they don't always work out the way they plan. And this Promise program has actually led to some things that young people that should have charges on their record, should be sanctioned for their behaviors, were not. And I'm sure that went for non-minority kids as well as minority kids. But when we see this guy down in Florida, what happened here, doesn't seem that any of that made it to his record. And if that was part of the Promise program, we can see abject failure. The concept is a good one. It's a nice idea, make sure everything's fair. But we see there are 17 dead young people could be directly related to that Promise program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. No, I like the way you laid that out. That's very, very honest, very fair, Joe, the way you put it out there and say, you know, the idea is really good. And you're right. And the idea sometimes that come from the left or the right can be good. It's how we go about them. It's, of course, how we execute them. And of course, are some of these programs at the end of the day making other people unsafe? Are they jeopardizing other people's civil rights? Are they jeopardizing their right to have a quality lifestyle? That's really what you got to ask yourself. Because, you know, Joe, you could take the same equation and put it, you could talk about the sanctuary cities, you could talk about the illegal alien problem, you could talk about illegal immigration, you could talk about it's the same problem over there. It's the same problem we're having in society all over the place here. And you're right, it's self-defeating. I mean,
when I look at it for the bigger thing, what I'm seeing is that it's good ideas to make things fair, and but they're socially engineering our society unrealistically. They're trying to change numbers without facts. They want the numbers to be different so everyone feels better about it. But it, like you said, does it endanger other people? Well, I think it endangered 17 people in Parkland, Florida.
Big time. Social engineering is what I take out of what you just said, and you are spot on. It is social engineering, which doesn't work. You cannot engineer this stuff. It is what it is. I want to ask you something on that basis, please. It's a difficult line of questions I want to get into with you to explore, because with your background in law enforcement and now with the school security and the training, you come from a very unique vantage point to be able to open up our eyes a little bit and look a little deeper into something. Let's bring it back for a moment, please, to where we started this with the program and the idea of what this program was going to do. And back to the arrest records in the criminal, the mischievous placement of a lot of these kids. Back to the motive of the fact that a lot of the minority young people were at a much higher rate of getting into trouble. Their arrest records, problems with the law were very prevalent, which is why Obama and Holden looked at all this and said, well, there must be some racism here. I want to ask you something. This is kind of pivotal to a lot of problems we're having in our country that state really to the whole big problem of, you know, the whole big fight out of Ferguson and Trayvon Martin and Black Lives Matter and Blue Lives and everything that has permeated the year in law enforcement and our society here in this country. That's what I see. And now you bring it back to a program like this. Are minority children at this point, are they more mischievous? Are they more susceptible to crime? Is it the quality of lifestyle? Is it... why are the numbers, is there racism involved there? What's really going on? What's happening there?
Well, when I look at it, I try to be honest about it and say to myself, please. The words that come out that we see with social engineering and we see with all of these ideas, many of them on the left that come out this way, is it's political correctness. We can't say what we actually see. We can't speak the truth about things because it brings up very uncomfortable subjects for people to talk about. You know, crime and punishment is a big one. We want our country to be race-free. We don't want anyone to base anything we do with anyone based on their race. That's completely inappropriate. You know, we have a history of racism and we've overcome a lot of it. And as we move forward, we're always trying to find ways to stamp out the last vestiges of it. So when I look at it, I say the program, when I researched the program, it was to remove kids who had minor misbehavior problems. Well, minor misbehavior, you can see is someone talking up when they shouldn't speak up, getting out of their chair when they shouldn't get out of their chair. And kids do this. All kinds of kids do this. So I could see where if you thought that there was some racism involved, that, okay, young minority kids, they get out of their chair and the teacher sends them to the office and does it repeatedly, and therefore they end up getting suspended for repeated problems. There's only really two ways to look at it. Either the truth is they're doing it more than the other kids in the class,
right?
Or the teacher just doesn't like minority kids.
There you go.
That comes down to, you know, we have to look internally and see to ourselves, am I really doing that? You know, statistically, when we look and you see the news and the news stopped putting out the race of the person that commits a crime because they said, well, you don't want to put things on there because it looks like minority people are always committing types of crime. So they say there's an armed robbery at 5th and Main, and we're looking for a 5'6" man with a gun. Mm-hmm. Well, that leads to, like, every man 5'6" walking by might be your suspect. How are you supposed to figure out who it is? If he's a white guy, you should say it's a white guy. I'm an Italian guy. If it's an Italian guy, you should say he's an Italian-American man. Yeah. 5'8", very handsome, walking down the street. That's who we're looking for. Mm-hmm. But people are afraid. You saw that in the media, that they stopped giving out the race of the person. Again, that's to engineer how things look instead of dealing with the truth. Mm-hmm. I can't say what's going on in every single one of these classes. Mm-hmm. I can only say we have to make sure our teachers, our police officers, everyone understands fair is fair, be just to everybody. And if it turns out that one group is getting themselves in more trouble than another, then we should help that group to overcome those problems. And I think I want to give the benefit of the doubt to President Obama, was that he was looking at this and going, hey, this is not something that's right for our kids, American kids who happen to be a minority.
Okay.
And how can we prevent them from having a life that ends up going from the classroom to the jailhouse?
Right.
Nobody wants that for anybody. But at the same time, we really can't bend the truth, because that doesn't stop any crimes that are happening. And minor misbehaviors are completely different than assaults, weapons, hurting people, and eventually, like this young man in Florida, you know, killing people.
Yeah, thank you for that, and thank you for being fair in the way you said that. I really respect that. You know, I was thinking right away as you were talking, Lieutenant, about President George W., about when he had the No Child Left Behind. You remember the No Child Left Behind program,
yes.
You know? And it's sort of in the same theory. The ideas and thoughts were good. Of course, it didn't work specifically for a lot of reasons, but it was certainly front and center on my mind here. You know, the funny, you hit the nail head on for me with the racism conversation when you talk about the black man, the white man, the Italian man, the Indian man, whoever it may be. Very interesting, politically correct, profiling. Again, profiling, the Muslim man, the white man. And, you know, it's funny you bring this up. Very interesting. Because we just did a two-part extraordinary discussion on another show on America Out Loud, Joe, on racism. Very, very powerful. And one of the points, one of the commentators on there, a very passionate, strong black American woman, was offended that they would say that a lot of the crimes and other things, that they would say a black man, we're looking for a black man, or they would identify his, and a lot of people agreed with that. And it did sound on the surface like that was maybe a bit of racism because they were saying a black man and making that the real pivotal point. But what you're saying from a law enforcement standpoint, there's a reason that's done, because if you're just looking for a 5'6" man and you don't break it down any more than that, then you really are looking for a needle in a haystack. So that's interesting. It's funny how you bring that up. Just talked about this 2 days ago, I'll tell you. So that's, it's wild, isn't it?
It is. And not only that, but if you're putting it out on the news,
right?
We're always telling people, see something, say something. How are they supposed to help us and call in and say, hey, I think I saw the guy? They have no idea who the guy is. Because they have no real description of the guy, because we don't want to hurt anybody's feelings. I am not offended when I hear stories about organized crime, just because I'm Italian. I'm not offended by that. But I do understand how some people in our country can be offended by these things. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I can understand it. We have to understand each other.
Well, I can understand it as well, because as you say, we have a history of this racism business in this country, sadly. And as you say, I love the way you put it out there so perfectly. There are those of us patriots who get it, who are trying to, stamp down on the last, pieces of this thing. We want to be done with it. We want to move the agenda forward. And it still raises its head. And there's still that threat of racism, even with the progress we've made as a society, it still exists. In this particular case in Broward County, Lieutenant, now again, the records show that if you combine it all, over 60 tips, get a load of this, 60 tips or more were made to police agencies there, the FBI, the sheriff, the county police, and still this young guy, I don't need to use his name, I don't do that on my programs, but he was able to walk in and purchase an AR-15. Now, how do we prevent that from happening again? And it boggles the mind, Lieutenant Mangaro, that happened.
There are no words to describe when something goes wrong in an investigation or some type of a public safety thing. When something goes sideways that you didn't intend on, that's bad enough. This particular case, this looks like something you couldn't make up a novel that would have as many mistakes in it on every area. Now, if the Promise program is part of what happened here, that they didn't write and down and document what this kid was doing because it was part of that program. This, the things that he was accused of, from what we're hearing in the news accounts, just seem that they're much, much more than minor misbehavior type of things. And if this political correctness, social engineering program that they were trying to prevent, you know, minority kids from being dragged into the system, allowed this guy to have done these things and still walk into a gun store and pass a gun background, we have only really two choices here. We either choose to stay on the political correctness path, mm-hmm. which is going to destroy us because of things just like this, or we're going to have an honest discussion about these things. And the problem is, Malcolm, mm-hmm. you and I are having this discussion right now. Mm-hmm. God forbid you say the wrong word in an interview when your heart is in the right place trying to talk about this and let's get to some solutions. Let's help all our American brothers and sisters be one giant people that all have justice and everything. You say one wrong word and you'll be attacked because it's used as a political weapon to silence people so that we don't have the conversation. And that is frightening.
Yeah, it's very frightening, my friend. Very, very frightening. And, I think the last thing I want to touch on with you is as we move forward now from Broward County and what has happened there, and again, I'll remind you, Joe, that, memories in this country are very short. Any massacre event that's happened in our history, weeks later, and you almost, you could pull people and find that they don't even remember what you're talking about anymore, let alone the blood that was shed and the lives that were lost and the things that we really should be talking about, the victims and the survivors and the people that are worthy of this conversation. But the more distance that happens from the point of the act itself, that criminal event, to now, and then things get laxed again and politicians don't do. Tell me the clip notes on what you would like to see happen now, please, to fix this thing. What's the 1, 2, 3, 4 that we do?
Sure. Well, this is something that, as you know, I do training and I write a lot of articles and I'm trying to figure out how to be part of the solution. One of the things I'm trying to do in my school district and bring through whatever avenues of availability I have is we have to be able to track when people are displaying these behaviors. This kid down in Florida did not just wake up that morning and decide, hey, I'm going to go to school and kill my schoolmate. That's something that he demonstrated. In his case, we know there's 60 some times, as you pointed out, that he's made problematic statements or whatever, and the police were aware of it. But when we look at these other kids, almost every single workplace shooter, killer, or school shooter and killer also goes out and they tell people things, they say things, they post things on social media. And the reality is people are not trained to track these things. They're not trained what to do with the information. So I'm looking now in the schools and I'm creating a program for tracking kids as early as sometimes in the fifth grade. They start to say things that are inappropriate. Now, that doesn't mean we track them down like with the police, but we keep a running total. Every time a kid makes a drawing that's a little inappropriate, we have to look at it and analyze it. What's in that drawing? Mm-hmm. When they write something in their journals, because this is where this information comes out after a tragedy. We go back and investigate it and we find it. So that's a program I'm creating now, tracking potential.
You know, this is good. This is really good to hear, because I've been talking about some sort of a national program, exactly that, Lieutenant, that would do exactly that. Something that would at least allow us to keep score. So what you're talking about is just simply keeping score, because if somebody has a score that, tips the chart over, we need to know about it. Like in this kid here, I mean, we need to know about it. I mean, you got some screws loose. There needs to be some sort of a mechanism in this country to be able to identify that and put it to rest. So you do not purchase an AR-15, which brings me to the last point of my point, is that background checks need to be reinforced and we need to tighten that down. Background checks, I don't accept anybody on any side of the police saying we don't need to do that. You owning any arms is a privilege and a right and an American right, absolutely, the right to bear arms. But if you wish to do harm on it and you have some criminal intent, you are not entitled to that, and we need to know what that is. And that's my answer back for control of the amendment and the guns and the rest of the nonsense. Big thank you here to Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro here for joining us. And I want to give you a last thought here on Reverend Billy Graham. You know, this week we honored the Reverend by his body. As you know, was at the Capitol Rotunda for public review. And, of course, Congress, executive branch, courts, and the public were invited in for the ceremony. A very, very an amazing sight. Reverend Graham is only the fourth civilian to receive this great honor. And I'll tell you, I wonder what he'd be looking down and thinking right now about this story. He was buried, folks, at his request in a simple wooden pine box. Wow. All right. Well, listen, that's another Viewpoint this Sunday. And we thank you for being here and being part of the America Out Loud story, friends. Viewpoint this Sunday will always deliver an honest analysis and opinions on all sides of the political aisle. But we don't discriminate against an opinion. The main thing is we are always in search of the out loud truth.